Arts, and it originally aired in Ganasadage on RKR, reviving Ganasadage Radio.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Fort, nous gain pouvoir, c'est pour ça yo te mande m ki jan bagage ta, c'est met corps qui veille corps, gain moun qui balait trop, des bayo qui gade langue yo on dit jan pop, aketo la tourné expérience en li besoin, bouche nan on pou ka boire même si de l'eau senti, oiseau li fait niche li ka li te gete lou quoi li te pedi, mais non mon chemin li piti piti pa courir aussi riche malheureux, nous carrezi tant qu'on prédit gade gade nous fait vini, piti c'est nous bon travail pour faire, pa gain fatigue ba ça li pi gros passo, senti bon coûté cher y a touché ça l'air, gale ça pas qu'on aime, mais yo te dis l'autre jour. Gé yo qui compte courir, mais yo pas qu'on caché. Mais les marées a monté, n'a ouais ça qu'à nager.
Yo pas vle pour nous dîner là, mais je dis yo m'éplie ça. Yo pas vle pour nous dîner là, mais je dis yo m'éplie ça. Yo pas vle pour nous dîner là, mais je dis yo m'éplie ça. Yo pas vle pour nous dîner là, mais je dis yo m'éplie ça.
Gaïe. Que t'aimes sortir, ça se l'en bien mariné. Qu'on crée à quand y'aime fait miracle à demain. Gale, pas qu'on est pour qui ça y a traîné. Mais pour faire move, c'est pour marcher qu'on fait l'air. Avant mal noyer tête, moi non, bol clair. M'fait ménage dans telle femme, en plus mal changé râle. C'est pour ça, ça m'a fait, c'est pour telle femme. Les femmes, m'y apprendis, mais ça blé dit m'gon pitié. M'ba j'aime la caille, m'son bon nomade. M'ba j'aime retour place, y'a qu'on relève pieds poudrés. Moi qu'on l'en met, moi pas j'aime qu'un bécrasse. Pile ou pas, s'ouvre les pailles, ça fait longtemps m'ba gon chiasse. Chaque jour, même bagay, nous vin pour travail, sous on chante bataille, pas vin pour piller. C'est bon vay, moi vin bye. Si on négatif, ça m'a tout, c'est bye bye.
Gaï, 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 gaï.
Moi pas qu'à y'a de gade m'bisa. Nous voulons connaître qui moun qui la. Bisa, vraiment pas qu'à chita. Gade qui j'en m'a pas ou antipa.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and on the air with us this evening, we have Wally. He is an artist, musician of Haitian descent based in Montreal. He's a founding member of the hip-hop supergroup called Nomadic Massive, and is also a father, a grassroots community builder, youth worker, and an entrepreneur. He's bringing a unique blend of Afro-Caribbean and Latin influences with modern sound into a hip-hop format, while he brings a new vision of occupying space unapologetically. Known as a trilingual MC, following the release of his first solo album, Black Soap, in 2018, Wally toured the United States and Europe. Recently, he released Soap Opera, an excellent EP mixing hip-hop, Haitian, and Afro-Caribbean influences. The Soap Opera was charted number one in the national hip-hop chart, Earshot, in the month of October 2020. His first single, pronounced Bliyasa, in English, Bliyesa, means forget about it in Haitian Creole. Sorry about that, I was reading the phonetic translation. It is the first single off of his new EP, Soap Opera, Wally. Welcome, brother. Yes. We've been trying to get you on for a while. Just by your bio, we know you're a busy, busy man. So, you know.
most deaf, man. Thanks a lot for the invitation. And thanks a lot for, reading this. His bio is kind of crazy to just, like, listening and hear about it. But, yeah, thanks a lot for inviting me, man. I'm really happy to be here.
It is a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I've been wanting to have you on the show because at the time that we first asked you to come on, you were deep in your entrepreneurship phase. Yep. You were making the Wiser Musk, I believe it was, yes, soaps and beard oils.
Yep. Yes, yes. Exactly.
That's what I still need to get mine, man. I still need to get mine from you. Let me know where I send that e-transfer so we can you can send me the goods, man.
We can talk about that. Yeah, definitely. I'll send you some good stuff, man. Definitely.
Listen, you know, since the pandemic hit, we like to check in with our guests since we're doing a new format. Well, you'll know it as a new format. We're going to be featuring you for the whole show. So,
nice.
You know, we can relax. We don't have to rush. You know, it's not like a little 15-minute, like back in the day, a little 10-minute thing. How are you doing, man? How has this pandemic affected you? You know, you're a father. You wear multiple hats. So how has this affected your life?
I mean, you know, like most of us, you know, we are impacted in some ways, you know, with this pandemic. But you know, I was so super blessed before the pandemic hit. I was in Brazil. So I was in Brazil in 2020. I remember I came back on March 9th. And then a couple of days after, you know, there was this big announcement that, you know, most of the things were closed and, you know, airport and like, you know, on March 14th around that, you know, the provincial government made the statement. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, you know, like everybody thought it was going to take a couple of weeks and everything is going to get back to normal. But here we are 2 years after, you know, still almost in the same situation, if not like, you know, more worse. But personally, myself, it was difficult at first.
Okay.
Because, you know, I just came back, had like a good run of just like pushing my music to reach new heights or just like bridge and network with many other people while I was traveling. And then the fact that the pandemic, you know, put a stop to my travels and my project. So I had to be creative in finding ways to just like to continue this project, because basically the soap opera EP came up during the pandemic in 2020, August 2020. But, you know, To answer your question personally, I feel like a pinball. You know, I feel like I'm being like pushed from one side to another side, and I have to adapt myself all the time. You know, and you know, as a father as well, you know, I have to keep not only my sanity, but stay focused to make sure that, you know, I'm there for my child as well. You know,
right?
The presence of me in at home. And, you know, to be focused and to be present is very important. So, you know, music played a big part in keeping this form of sanity and mental health balance, you know, for me, you know, and then, you know, just using creative solution, be like, well, you know what I'm saying? It's for a certain time. We don't know when this will end, but, you know, do music, guitar loops, learn the things that you didn't have time to do because I was so busy with Nomadic Massive and my personal career.
Right.
So I have the chance to do it now, being in, you know, in a slow pace, you know, career driven, you know, like it's like more slow now. So I have a chance to do things that I've always wanted to do. But to be fully honest, I had my lows, but the lows came because, you know, a lot of confusion or not knowing where we're going, the uncertainty of, you know, when you have to adapt constantly, you know, already if you're in a space of uncertainty and you have to adapt, it's difficult, you know, to just see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, When it goes from specifically in your case, you were traveling internationally to now you have to stay within the you literally have to stay within the confines of the four walls of your house. That's a complete switch, and you're a performer. Nomadic Massive is anywhere between 12 and 15 folks strong, if I'm not mistaken. Like, there's a huge group, so. So, you know, you're used to traveling with your crew, you know, you got everybody, and now you're just like rolling solo or rolling with your partner or rolling with your kid, if your kid's with you, and that's like a completely different experience.
Most definitely, yeah.
So I can only imagine. Good. I can only imagine what that does to your mental health. Like I myself, I'm a single father who lives alone,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
you know, I my child is with the mother, so I'm by mm-hmm. myself. You know, not much has changed in terms of the format for me. And then I'm also mm-hmm. an essential worker, quote unquote. So I have mm-hmm. to leave my house to go to work. So the only mm-hmm. thing that really changed for me during the pandemic was the mask, you know? And of course, constant sanitizing and stuff. And I was kind of happy with like the lockdown because, you know, less people around, less people to interact with. I'm like, not seeing hundreds of people. Like, I had a huge shock when like things opened up and I was, and like a bus was like packed with people. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. what is going on? You know? But one thing I've noticed is that people are becoming much more vocal about taking care of their mental health. Much more vocal about everything from suffering with depression. Even people are being more open about the fact that they've had suicidal tendencies and all kinds of stuff, which can be shocking to someone who is not aware of the fact that, you know, mental health is a serious issue.
But I think also, like, there's an interesting way that this pandemic has, because of the circumstances, made people face themselves in a way that they would not face themselves, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And,
you know, when you say mental health is one thing, but also there's people leading more to a self-care to make certain choices in their life that they, you know, didn't have time to make when the pandemic was not there, basically.
Exactly.
You know? It's like now I'm able to make certain choices about how I want to live my life,
mm-hmm.
you know? And self-care is one of the things to just counter the mental health issue that one person can have. So mm-hmm. I think that there's also the benefits of, for some people, you know, I would say for me, you know, to face myself would be one thing that the pandemic brought to me and keep bringing to me to, you know, face myself and make important choices, like informed choices.
Mm-hmm.
And choices that will benefit not only me, but my family as well, you know?
Yeah.
So career-wise, family-wise, but yeah, there's an interesting thing when you say, like, a lot of people talk about themselves, expressing themselves about the crisis mode that they're facing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's real.
Yeah.
This thing is real, you know?
Yeah. I want to ask you, because, like I said earlier, you wear a lot of hats. Where did Wally start? Right? So, because, like, you know, you're founding, well, I mean, you could share that as well, but I'm talking like you're a founding member of Nomadic Massive, your father, grassroots community builder, youth worker, entrepreneur, you got your Wiser Musk product line. Like, where did you start? Like, take us back to the beginning. Of Wally.
I mean, you know, like, yeah, there's so many. I've been trying to, like, you know, synthesize this in a way that, you know.
Hey, we got an hour and a half, man. You don't have to you don't have to synthesize it into one sentence. Let's go, man. Let's talk. Let's get into it.
Okay. Well, first, I was born in Montreal, Haitian parents, as you mentioned in the introduction of the show. I grew up in Saint Michel in the east of Montreal. This is where I grew up, and this is where pretty much everything started for me in regard to my love and passion for music and for sports as well, you know, because these were the two things that, you know, kept me out of the streets and troubles, you know, as most of my Asian counterparts and friends at that time as well. Some stuff that we didn't know, but we, you know, I grew up in Saint Michel where, like, there was so many gang members at that time, and so many groups of, you know, who identify with the street codes and street knowledge and street gang. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, I grew up in the 90s hip hop, so there was that side, but there was also the alternative side of, like, you know, the fruit of Islam and people teaching, you know, about, you know, the knowledge of self and all that stuff. And I was more interested in that, right, than being on the street, you know?
Yeah.
And then, so kind of, that kind of, like, you know, directed my thoughts and choices, or, you know, I guess my interests, you know, mm-hmm, in who I wanted to become, or what I was drawn mostly about, you know?
Right.
But then, you know, start discovering music at that time, as at the same time, around 15 years old, 15, mm-hmm, 15, yeah, my teenage, you know. But so, interestingly enough, so bands, you know, I was not exposed to much music, but because, well, we had radios, the community radio station did shared a lot of the music that I like, hip hop. I'm talking about, like, De La Soul, Public Enemy, KRS-One. These are bands that I remember used to play at 90.3, basically, like that.
Where we are now.
Used to play that shit. Exactly, yeah. You know? And so it's been a long time. I used to sit down next to my radio and just listen and just taping all these rap songs. Mm-hmm. But really what hit me, or what pushed Wally to be Wally what he is today, is just like my love for and passion for music really happened when I started going to New York in my teen years,
okay,
you know, more often. Because as most people know, Haitians have, like, families all over the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly, you know, in Miami and, mm-hmm, New York and in Montreal, you know. So I have a lot of families in New York, so I used to go there mostly almost every summer, two or three times a year, and also in winter, all depending on what activities was happening in New York with my family. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, it was an opportunity for me, knowing that most hip hop was just, like, flourishing in that time, it was to get all the music from there and bring it back to Montreal.
Yeah.
So I had really, you know, the pleasure to just, like, you know, when I used to go to a wedding in New York, Brooklyn, after the wedding, I would go by myself on Flatbush, just walk on down the street.
Flatbush Avenue, you know, get those mixtapes.
Yeah. Get those mixtapes and come back to Montreal and share it to my friends, you know? So, mm-hmm, that was, like, really a fun thing. And then, you know, come back with the exclusivity, you know? And then, which was, you know, kind of amazing. It's not like today we have streaming where you can have access to music just by a click of a button. But
exactly,
before, it's just to go physically there, yeah, and get that exclusivity, come back to Montreal, share with your friends.
And that's when you had to get tapes.
Exactly, right. Tape cassettes, you know? these were the real mixtapes, you know?
Right, the literal mixtapes. Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
They'll call it mixtape today, but they don't look like a mixtape.
No, not at all, not at all. Now it's a metaphorical mixtape. It's not a literal, exactly, mixtape. You know?
Exactly. So, yeah, you know, fast forward, you know, life, you know, shaped itself where, you know, I was exposed to English rap. Is, you know, that's what I knew. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started making music in English. But at that time, I didn't speak the language very well.
Okay.
You know, my first language is French, actually Haitian Creole, and then French, and moved to English. But so I had to, you know, find ways to learn English. I mean, I had English courses in school, but not, you know, enough for me to learn about this hip hop culture that I was falling in love with, you know?
Got it.
So, but that's when the CJEP, I decided to go to Vanier College to immerse myself in completely Anglophone, you know, school where, you know, I would be not only compelled, but, like, you know, yeah, basically forced to just, like, you know, work hard to just learn the language, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that opened my eyes a lot more to when I started learning more English and be able to speak English better. I started, you know, re-listening again to songs that I used to listen, that I used to like from KRS-One or Public Enemy or Rakim, Eric Dean Rakim, yeah, and De La Soul, and discovering the message that was behind the songs. Mm. And that was really powerful, you know? You know, because I used to listen and just phonetically, I used to just catch a few words. But then when I started re-listening again, I was like, whoa, you know, I know exactly why I fell in love with this art form, you know, and this music. You know,
it's interesting that you're saying that, because I've been having the same experience, but with mm-hmm. movies. Because during the pandemic, I, you know, got onto several different streaming services, and mm-hmm. one of them is Amazon Prime, and Amazon has a beautiful catalog of old movies from like the 1980s and 1990s, like black cinema. I'm talking like Harlem Nights and like Boomerang. And
yes,
rewatching those movies, I was blown away, especially Boomerang. I was having a conversation about that movie recently.
With Eddie Murphy, right?
Boomerang, Eddie Murphy, and Halle Berry, Robin Givens as yeah. well. Yeah. Where Eddie Murphy is kind of like, he's kind of like this player who like has all these women and stuff like that. But when I rewatched the movie, my conception of it was completely different from what I remembered. Because what I believed it was is that he was a no good dog that was just like having sex with all these women and dumping them because they had messed up toes or
yes, I remember.
You know, they make weird noises or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But when I rewatch it with my 40-year-old adult eyes, I realized that no, he wasn't actually a player. He was a man looking for love in the wrong way.
Interesting. Yes. Yes.
In that he was going and having sex with all these women, but he wasn't looking for a connection.
Yes.
So when Robin Givens came along now, he thought he had this connection, but whoopsie daisy, Robin Givens was actually him.
Who was player, just, yeah.
But to the extreme, she was actually a player who didn't care. But all of that to say is like, I love how, you know, we can take something that was in the past and have a certain experience and have a very grounded experience that's true.
Mm.
Like you had that grounded experience when you first listened to the music, maybe with more French ears, more Creole ears. And then several years later or however much time later, you go back and you listen and you have a completely different experience.
Yes.
That's the beauty of art and music and movies. Yeah. Like you can get so many messages from the same thing that you just watch.
Yeah.
You just watch it again a few years later.
True. It's true.
I'm looking forward to watching Get Out again in another 10 years.
Oh man, you'd be like, oh my God, so many layers. It's true. And it's a testament of like how, you know, art is ever alive. It's always alive.
Yes.
You know, because it can always like bring something new to you. And the example you give is a good example too. You know, it's like, you know, scaling back, going back to old movies you watch. The same thing with music that you've listened, you know, in your teen years. And then, you know, in my teen years and then go to the CJEP, I'm like 18, 20, you know, and then I'm like, oh, let me listen back to this. I'm like, whoa, blown away. I'm like, wow, you know, but the impact was real. Like you said, the impact, the first thing that happened was real. I was like, oh, I feel that a sense of belonging. I feel, that's what I felt. It was like, oh, I feel like I belong to a group or a culture, a movement. It was clear in my head. It was like, I don't know how clear that, I mean, I am explaining it and I'm like, wow, it was so clear. I remember exactly when it happened. I was like, wow.
You're right.
I remember I listened to that. I was listening to a song that I recorded on my tape cassette on CKUT. It was a show in 90.3. And then the next day I woke up and because I had slept over the show because it was really late at night.
Right.
But then I listened to my tape the next morning and then I was like, whoa. And I fell stumbled into that song, De La Soul, Say No Go.
Right.
It was a sample by Hall & Oates. That song just blew me away. And I was like, I took my skateboard. I remember it. I, you know, in Saint Michel, went to my friend, Kirk, at that time, and then I made him listen to that. And we just listened to that song, no joke, for like 5 hours straight on loop.
Wow.
Like, and we didn't understand nothing. But that's so good, bro. It's like, you know, so that's the power of music, power of art, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, listen to that, and after learning English and learning how to speak and how to write it well, and then listen to it, it's just, then it took off from there, you know? And I started writing my own, my first song basically is around that time where I was like, before I used to write phonetically,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to say, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then when I was able to just recite a whole verse of an artist that I really liked,
yeah,
I was like, man, I can recite the whole verse of Eric B. and Rakim.
Mm.
You know, I ain't no joke. Because I can recite the whole thing. I was like, maybe I can write my own song.
Right.
Maybe I can write my own verse. Why right. not?
Yeah.
Let me try.
Yeah.
Let me try to write my own verse. I've been like writing down these guys in my like as a fan, like writing their lyrics down because I love it so much. And I love that song so much. I want to know what they're saying and how the flow, the delivery and all that. And all the message behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, yeah, let me write. So I did try. And yeah, you know, I remember writing my first song and writing it. I know there's like tons of mistakes. And I hopefully one day I'll find my first rap. I remember it in my head, but I can't spit it right now because
right.
it's just like it's coming back so far.
Right.
But, you know, I remember it being like, such an achievement
mm-hmm.
to write my first verse
right.
of 16 bars. And I don't even know if it was 16 bars. I knew it was just like, I wrote a verse,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
And just rapping it. And I was like so happy. It like, and I took months to write it.
Mm.
It took maybe even a year, you
okay.
know, to write my first. Because it was like, I wanted to make sure that everything was like
perfect. Yeah.
Like, you know? Because it's my first one, and it's like, it didn't come up as easy. The rest, like, after that, verses came, like, as inspiration comes, you know?
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
But the first song, like, I took my time, and I was, like, trying to find the right word and what I'm trying to say and everything. And then, yeah, and then that's an achievement in itself for me. I really enjoyed that process, and then that opened my eyes to be like, okay, if I can do this, maybe I can write a full song now. Try
right.
to write a full song.
Right. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Wally, who is giving us his journey as an artist. Started off in Saint-Michel, just falling in love with music, listening to our very own CKUT 90.3 FM. And then traveling to New York during the summer, getting mixtapes on Flatbush Avenue and coming back to Montreal and sharing that with his folks, and then eventually deciding to take one full year to write his first verse. We do have to take a quick break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Yo. I'm making moves, lose myself in a song, and look around, only to find myself on the floor. I crawl in the space to give thanks to the most, and manifest a godlike image from within. The day you had to go while I was drowning in the sorrow, alone in my room and afraid to see tomorrow. Money in the Bible, purify the evil. Everything I've seen and done, I should write a novel. I guess it's what I'm doing now by writing these bars. Backpack and trauma, trying to breathe like a comma. Reality's a monster, now we get along. I took a slap in my face and now I'm born in single dad. I found the right channel, one that is suitable. Focus on my little one and remain accountable. Find the essential, lost in my mansion. It's what made me last. Love is what I'm chasing now. Yeah. Yo, hey yo, dance
is in the lobby with a drink and a celly and a case full of products, and I've just passed the customs. And yet from day one I've been reasoning my logic to give away samples and making new customers. Cut the merchant app, then ship it to Atlanta. Montreal's a place where we all create this magic, and now it breaks the window just to feel the wind blow. Could I deal with pros and find myself in every home? I've people in place where we part of the decision. You're a guest in this culture, you need to take your shoes off. Was raised to be nice, where we from we do fight. To hustle we just might, to cook cake it feels right. By the corner, inside my Toyota, and get more dollar dollar than a soap opera. I cook soap and not coke, and clean rope for black folks. And think no less people, and buy land and build hope. Now. Yeah. Yeah.
Now Cara Patties is on a fast break with Veggie Patty leading the charge. The pass is down deep to Goat Patty. Goat Patty passes baseline to Beef Patty. Beef Patty shoots from downtown at the buzzer. And bingo! It's in! It's in! Cara Patties wins the game and is now the world champions! The number one in Montreal. Come on down to 9550 Jean Milot in LaSalle for the best patties, roadies, jerk chicken, and more. Or call us at 438-387-4004. Cara Patties, the champions of Montreal.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and our guest this evening is Wally. He's an American artist, musician of Haitian descent based in Montreal. He grew up in Saint-Michel, fell in love with music very young, listening to our very own CKUT 90.3 FM. And then just kind of built from there until he got his first track, writing for almost a year, first verse, and then it just started coming easier. So as you decided to start writing, and that became much, much more fluid, and you were able to massage the words, much better. Mm. How did you go from being kind of like, and I'm assuming, and correct me if I assume wrong, being like a lone writer, doing your own thing, maybe going to a couple of shows here and there, to like joining or helping to found Nomadic Massive. Because what I love about Nomadic Massive is the diversity. Like, it is literally one of the most diverse groups ever. Like, everyone is a minority in some way, shape, or form, even if they don't look like the minority. You know what I mean? Like, you have some folks that they look as white as snow, but they are actually Latin American. They speak 3, 4, 5 different languages, you know? So, and then you have, you know, all the beautiful brown faces that are in there. So, how did that happen? How did that connection end up flourishing? Because it's one of the most beautiful, for me, it's one of the most beautiful experiences to watch a Nomadic Massive performance. Like, I can gush all day long. Hands down.
Thank you. You know, Montreal is a small city, right?
Absolutely.
You know, and then also Montreal is very diverse. You know, we're known to, Montreal is a place where a lot of, you know, migrant population choose, you know, to come, you know, to establish themselves and their families, you know. My parents is from the second generation of diaspora who came to Montreal from Haiti in the 70s, you know, so to establish themselves here after the, you know, the Duvalier regime. And so it's interesting how, you know, each individual in Nomadic Massive all have an history, baggage, that served served each individual in the group when it was formed.
Right. You know?
What I mean by that is because we all have each one a specific background, and like you were saying, we're each part of a minority in the group. But each of us, we knew each other, but we were seeing each other in the Montreal hip hop scene, you know, or, you know, communal events, you know, from shows to a hip hop symposium. It was hip hop symposium organized in Concordia that Zegal was organizing at that time. And most of us also used to work in community as well. But so this was a close link to our, you know, form of activism, to our music, you know?
Yeah.
Like on the ground and also and to our music. So it was closely linked. So we used to see each other, you know, pretty much, you know, sometimes being on the same bill. And then really, it's really in 2002, I received a call by Lou Kensa. It was just like, oh, I'm organizing this event. I would like you to perform if you want. It'd be great to have you. But during that time, I had been, you know, previous to that, I was in a group called Cynics.
Right.
CYNICS, where we stayed together for a couple of years. And then that also helped me shape myself as an individual artist and also as a group. But then when the band part ways around 98, I was back into solo.
Okay.
So during that time, I was just like, you know, writing songs, trying to perform. I worked with Misery and Gandhi. Misery is Sans Pression, older brother.
Okay.
Sans Pression is a very French, popular Quebecois rapper, or actually a pioneer, basically. You know, we'll have to say the right words, a pioneer in the joual Quebecois rap, you know?
Okay, okay.
So during all that process, so in 2002, when Lou called me, I couldn't make it to the shows because I had an opportunity to go to Mexico. So I went to Mexico, came back. And 2 years after, there was another event, but the event was going to happen. It was a symposium in Cuba.
Right.
So Lou, again, who had grew up, he was born in France, but grew up in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of connection there. So he was like, let's bring a delegation there. But the idea was just like, let's have a few individual artists that, you know, I've seen throughout the years of my time in Montreal to go to Cuba, you know?
Yeah.
So there was Butter at that time. Butter Beats was from Argentina.
Yeah.
Was part of that project. Ali Sepu was part of that project. It's from Chile. And then there was like Christina, which is Ali Sepu's sister, from Chile as well. And then there was Vox Sambu from Haiti, Zegal, Liege, Rugged MC from Haiti as well, and myself, you know, from Haiti. So that was the first
iteration
kind of experience, you know?
Right.
And what happened is because in 2004, when we went at the Cuban hip hop symposium, there was only one spot left.
Wow.
You know?
Okay.
When we applied, it was like, okay, so each of us, we cannot, you know, registered as individual artists. So, but Lou and Boss was like, I really want all of us to go.
Right.
So we have, let's form a group. So basically it just happened the way it happened. It was like, okay, to register to go to Cuba as this hip hop symposium, we just have to create this group. So then we're like, okay, let's create this group to go to this trip.
Okay.
And we're like, okay. But we had never worked with each other. So wow. We were like, all individual artists were like, oh, damn, okay. That's a good idea. Let's try it. So we were trying to find names, Nomadic Missile, Nomadic, whatever. There was tons of names that came up too much. Nomadic Massive came up. And then we registered. And then we went to Cuba. And then during that time, we did one song together. It was because we were like, we had to find at least one song that we all played together. Because
right.
We could not just do like seven solo songs.
Exactly. That didn't make any sense. Yeah, that didn't make any sense.
Exactly. So we created this song. And then the first song we created together was Fama, you know? You know, Busco la Fama. And then we sang, but the response in Cuba was so amazing and so powerful. It felt like, you know, the chemistry also of all of us was just like so naturally, it was just there. Like there was like, everything felt in the right place.
Right.
You know, we performed. The chemistry was there. The style, each individual had a different style, but it kind of, we all met in the same way.
Yeah.
And on a common ground. And then people really liked it. So when we came back to Montreal, it was like, man, you know, we had such good feedback. Let's continue this journey. You know? And that's how the band was like formed. So it was formed in Cuba originally.
Yeah. Wow, that's beautiful. That's we need to hear that story more often, man. I didn't know that's kind of it. Literally, like, y'all were a bunch of nomads, you know, who came together, and you're massive. Yeah. So, you know, because it's not a small group. Big it's a group. Massive group, Nomadic Massive.
Yeah.
And so, were you only doing music at the time? Like, were you like the most artists, you know, multiple hustles at the same time?
Multiple hustles, man. It's always been that, you know, like you were saying before, wear different hats. It's true. It's like wearing different hats, meaning, you know, it's not as simple as it seems to just, you know, be a musician, an artist musician, and be able to, you know, being financially, you know, supported by your art, you know, it's like, right. So, no, I was hustling at that time. I remember during when a Nomadic Massive first in 2004, I had a company, actually. I was, like, doing painting, residential and commercial painting. That's what
okay.
I was doing.
Okay. Okay. All right.
So it was just, like, the side hustle. So I was doing that throughout the year, like, six months of the year. And then, you know, I could do music after. So... you know, so I was working
right, really hard. Because...
So I had a company, I had one or two employees. So entrepreneur is something that I always, you know, trying to push forward.
Yeah.
You know, for black ownership and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So so basically, yes, that was one of those. So I was not working yet in community. I was offering workshops, I remember, but not as, you know, as I'm involved as I am right now. You know?
Okay. That's interesting. I have a question. What was the support or no, not the support. What was the feedback like from your parents when they knew that you were like super serious about your music and, you know, because, I was fortunate in that my parents were not typical, but you hear this story so often of, you know, you have to be a lawyer, you have to be a doctor, you have to be an accountant. Yeah. But what was the feedback like from your family?
Wow. I mean, you know, first time I had a song, I mean, my mom called hip hop boom boom.
You know? Well, n'ap koute boom boom. What put it boom boom la?
Yeah, call it just. When I used to bump that in my room in Saint Michel, she used to call it boom boom, and in the basement, she was like losing her mind. She was like, couldn't do it anymore. I just put song on repeat forever.
Messe music, sir. Messe music, boom boom, sir.
Keep the boom boom, sir. C'est un yé yabdi là, c'est pas un yé yabdi. The boom boom, la fin en tête moins chaque jour. Suspendu ça.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I was like, you know, all the love I got from my mom. But for sure, man, my mom had definitely a different view of how she was seeing her kids to be successful or to choose life career, you know?
Yeah.
So basically, my mom is really interested in arts and culture, and I thank her for bringing me to a lot of, you know, events like theater and, you know, little shows here and there. But, you know, I remember when I was making music, I was not like serious and be like, oh, I want to do this as a career.
Mm-hmm.
But deep down inside, I knew I wanted to just push, you know, this. But I didn't say it to her yet because I was like, let me work on my craft before I present it to my mom and be like, yo, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember when finally, I got in 2003, I got a song. I was selected as one of the 15 artists to represent Canada with the radio, in the college radio circuit across Canada, to have a song on a compilation. It was my first time having a song on actual CD, you know?
Wow.
So nice. I was like, you know, that's the time. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I will present that, because that's, you know, it's a physical copy. I have a thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's a progress towards what I want to do, basically. And then I presented that, and she was really happy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For me, she didn't really listen to the song, you know?
Right.
As of yet, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, she was really happy of the thing is, like, and asking me questions about, like, are you sure there's other things, you should have something on the side, you should, you know, like, but, you know, she was never like, oh, don't do this, don't do that, you know, but more like encouraged me to have something, you know, as a plan B type stuff.
Right.
You know, to
have a backup.
To have a backup, mm-hmm. you know. And that's where, you know, the idea of me being an entrepreneur came strongly.
Okay.
You know?
So your mother kind of inspired you to find something else that would generate some kind of income. Not necessarily typical doctor, lawyer, accountant, but something that is tangible, that can generate income. Okay. I like that. It's good to hear a different story once in a while.
Yeah. But it's also to offer. Yeah, I agree. But it's also these ways was also to offer me a flexibility, because I knew in certain job prospect or career, you don't have that flexibility of being an artist musician because of the schedules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the scheduling can be very, if you become a lawyer or become, you know, a doctor, you know, your schedule may not give you enough time or opportunity to stay an artist.
Mm-hmm.
So the type of entrepreneurial journey that I was embarking on offered me that flexibility, so I can, you know, generate, you know, a form of capital, and the capital invested in my music.
Gotcha.
And then keep going on making the music. See what I'm saying?
Gotcha. Gotcha.
You know,
yeah.
It's kind of like a parallel journey, you know. You know, one feeds another.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are like doing an origin story of Wally and learning how he went from getting mixtapes in New York as a young kid, a teenager, and moving on to becoming a part of a founding member of Nomadic Massive. Their first official presentation was in Cuba, and he was fortunate to have his mom be actually encouraging, but also to like encourage a side hustle instead of a typical, you know, what typical Haitians, typical Jamaicans would do. I say Jamaicans because I'm half Jamaican, go be a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant. We do have to take a quick break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
This flight with EastJet. Let's fast forward this red tape.
When I press play, you eject. Holding on this way now. Sitting next to an old plane.
Memories could switch lanes, so I'm sitting lazy with a new aim. We had food and two shots, then we got to my spot. This time I'ma get my hopes up, so real I need no makeup. Life is made of great gifts, I mean you were so fantastic. Felt like it was magic, our connection was so instant. Time to leave our romance, we're side to side facing turbulence. Not once, not twice, we gave a chance. The zone we flown could stand a chance. I take my hand, last chance. We got so high, now we're landing. I'm feeling down the assistance, but there's no stopping.
Can we fly one more time? myself many times that this time would be the last time that I see you cry. But I kept trying and I caught myself lying a few times. I mean, my pride took me for a ride with no one else beside me. But me acting silly and so blind that I couldn't see. And yes, behind me, no floors, I'm free falling and gots to trust the process. But there are 6 million ways to grow, gots to choose one. Like today, I wanted to run a 5K, but my app decided to fail me. It's what my screen displayed, and now I'm just kind of lele. Staring at the hour encrusted in my black mirror. As my blues grew darker, you were right there by the corner. You asked me to come back home.
Yes, 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 we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I am here with Wally, a Haitian descent artist, musician based in Montreal, who has been, just on like this journey across the planet throughout his entire career. Was a founding member of the hip-hop supergroup Nomadic Massive that actually came together and did their first track together in Cuba and performed to an amazing audience. And the feedback was so amazing that 20-some-odd years later, they're still going strong. Wally, thank you so much for being here, man. Like, I feel like I'm watching a documentary about your life because I'm just like visualizing everything that you're telling me. I'm getting on the plane with y'all, flying to Cuba and coming back and being in that kind of writer's group setting. So thank you so much for sharing with us.
No problem.
So we had talked about the fact that, you know, Your mom encouraged you to have a side hustle, and you decided to create a painting business. But around that time, when Nomadic Massive was massaging into the force that it is, you also became a father.
Yep.
So could you tell us a little bit of, like, how did fatherhood affect the way that you kind of moved in terms of like what new things did you start thinking of and be like, okay, I'm a father now, and how does my career impact my fatherhood? How does my music impact fatherhood? Like, what happened? That's the question. What happened when, you know, that baby popped out and you had this little human being that you had to take care of?
A lot of things happened, you know, when my kid came to life, you know, but before they came to life, I knew that I wanted to travel with my music. I knew it.
Right.
You know, and I knew it was going to be an important part of my personal development, career development, and spiritual also development as a career. And I knew it. And I had, you know, it's discussions that I had not only with myself, but I had with, you know, baby mom and my family, you know. And then when Nomadic came, it was kind of perfect. Everyone was on the same wavelength and same vibrational scale, frequency that everyone wanted to be traveling, you know, and make music. Yeah. Travel the world, and you know, and we were blessed with that.
Yeah.
Let's do this. We were blessed, and then we had the opportunity to visit places I never thought I was gonna like visit, you know. So, and then so when my child came to life, it gave me a boost again to push for things to work out, basically.
Yeah,
you know. For things to become not only, you know, a dream in my head, like a thought, you know, it was something to be like, okay, now I have this being and this human being, this beautiful being coming to life. I need to take care of that human being. I need to be there for that being, and I need to be present. And the best way to do that is me doing what I like to do, what I love to do, to be a person who will, a human being who will do something is passionate about to bring home, you know, I'm not gonna say bacon because I don't eat pork. But, you know, bring back home.
Bring home the cheddar, home. The cash, the bring money, the moolah. Cheddar,
you know what I'm saying?
The dollar bills, y'all.
The dollar bills, yo. You know. So you know, but you know, the first couple of years was very tough, difficult. You know, because when you have like a child that is so young, and you know, and Nomadic Massive is starting to just like. Being asked to just come to this place or come to that place and being really busy and
being solicited
traveling
a lot.
Here, traveling there.
Yeah.
So, you know, big shout out to Baby Mama was very, you know, supportive in that process and being there and understanding that, you know, it's something that was very important for me as a career development.
Right.
And not only, you know, seeing that as a, oh, I'm just traveling just for hobby and take pictures on the beach. No, I'm going there to work.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's a work thing. And it's part of the career development. So,
when baby came, you became even more focused.
Yes.
And you're like, okay, I have a goal in mind. I need to make this happen.
Yeah. Okay. I was doubly exponentially inspiring.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
To make things happen. And, you know, by any which means, mm-hmm. you know.
Malcolm X style, by any means necessary.
By any means necessary, man. Yeah. Bless his soul, man. Yeah. But, yeah, definitely, because, you know, it comes to a point where you bring a life to this world, you start seeing yourself through the eyes of your child, you know.
Yeah.
And then that is something very powerful. And then, you know, and that in itself is not only magical, but very inspirational to do things that is for you, something that speaks to you and that makes you vibrate at a higher frequency to be able to be there for your child. Because, you know, yes, I had my fears of like, oh, am I going to be able to make enough, you know, money to just, you know,
to support
survive your
family.
With my family and support my family, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, the universe provides, you know, and I believe so. When you do the work, the universe provides, you know?
Wow.
And if you sit down, well, there might be little chance that things will be brought to you. But if, you know, I believe
if you keep
that,
moving, if, you'll find them moving, on the way.
Yeah, there's like things that will open up. For you, definitely, and I felt blessed for that, and to receive these not only blessings, but there's ways that I could support my family,
right?
You know, despite all the traveling with Nomadic and being
all the challenges that poses.
Yeah, because it's also the presence too, you know, and mm-hmm. then now my child is, you know, of a certain age, mm-hmm. You know, way older now. And then, you know, she's mostly independent. And then, you know, it's different. So my career is shaping itself very differently. But at the beginning, it was tough. It was an adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, I must say, like, to keep it moving made things, you know, simpler, despite being difficult.
Right.
You know, and I remember I had like, because before I used to go to studio very far, you know, but, you know, when my child was born, I built a studio right next to the place where we were living.
Right.
You know, I was like, you know what? I want to spend as much time home as possible. So already with Nomadic Massive, busy with rehearsals, studio time, mm-hmm. and then also traveling.
Mm-hmm.
So having a studio next to the where we used to live before, it would give me the opportunity to stay home as much as I can, you know, and be the
father. Like instead of being commuting for like an hour and a half to and from wherever you're going, you literally take 5 minutes to go over. Exactly. And so you've saved an hour and 25 minutes of being able to be with your child. Like, it's down to like calculating the steps.
Exactly that. Yes, that's exactly that. Because, you know, then my child was with me when I was like writing songs, you know, and I was taking care of my child and then making beats, writing raps, rehearsing raps, spitting, you know, like, you know, so the proximity was good. So also give a balance and give a chance to baby mom to do other things too as well. You know, take a break, stuff like that.
Man, like, I can't believe, like, there's so little time to talk. Yeah. And somewhere in there, you, at some point, you decided, you know what, I'm going to go into, dare I say, men's health wellness and create soap and beard oil. Yeah. Like, how did that happen? Because, like, as far as I can remember, you were the first person that I heard of that was doing that kind of work.
Yeah.
I've never really heard of, like, stuff for men, you know, like, yeah, there was Dove men's soap and stuff like that, but, you know, that's not, I don't want bathing no Dove, you know? So tell me, how did Wiser Musk come about?
It's, again, it's, you know, that venture happened with, you know, it started when my child was born. Basically, again, an idea of entrepreneur that will just help, you know, bring home the money and then at the same time have a flexible schedule to be able to do art.
Right.
A baby mom, she had this, we're discussing about that, and she was making like a cream and perfume. And I was like, wow, you know, we should combine our business ideas and then do like cream and body lotion and perfume and all that. And I would make soap.
Right.
You know, so basically we can just combine this venture. So which we did.
Mm-hmm.
We had like a little space where we